Hello, hello, hello. This is Jan Desperate Peters, and I am your host for BTST Services Podcast, meeting you where you are. And I'm excited today, as I always am, to do this podcast because we have a great guest. And I'm joined today by BTST CEO, Chris Simon. Chris, hi, how are you? Welcome to the BTST Meeting You Where You Are podcast, which you created.
Well, thank you for having me here. How have you been?
I've been good. I wanted to just shout out again. I know that people that listen regularly, and you know what makes me feel so good is when I see
what
somebody.
What makes you feel so good?
When I see somebody I know and they say, Jan, I listen to your podcast.
Oh, really?
That makes me feel wonderful. Yes, yes. I'm excited to have this platform.
You're about to have your own magazine like O now.
I wish I had O's money. But, you know, that's coming too.
I know, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And every time I come into the podcast set, there's something new. So the first time I came, there was just a totally different set from mm-hmm. what you and Jada used to have. Mm-hmm. And then new pictures pop up, mm-hmm. and then lighting, which is incredible, and now we have these arms our microphones.
Well, if it was up to them, we'll have some new lighting as well, but I think that's next on the order list.
That's next on the order list?
Yeah, that and this expensive camera that they want, so.
Okay, all right. So it's just going to get better and better. Just trust me on that. So
Can I shout you out, though?
Yes.
Because we recently got an award for Kaiser Permanente for the Innovation in Healthcare Delivery Award. And I think I had a relationship with Kaiser in some capacity before, but I think in working with you on Shop Talk, which was a platform that you guys did, Good Health, Good Hair, where we were able to make it a film, that we were able to work directly with Kaiser, and they were able to see our passion as it relates to, you know, just being innovative in the way we do our work, whether it's content creation, whether it's, you know, the services that we provide and stuff like that, and all of that to be able to provide us with to award us at their thing. So, and I know that you played a significant role in that relationship and everything, so I just wanted to shout you out for that.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. Yeah, when we started putting, I'm getting good. I don't know if everybody would agree with me, but I'm getting better at posting on Instagram. So when you post, I can repost. That helps me out.
Make it easy for you.
You make it easy for me, right? And so there was this beautiful picture. If you go to Chris Simon's Instagram page or BTST Services, there's this beautiful picture of me and Chris and Jada and Ashley and Demetra. And I said I was happy and proud to be a part of the B Squad because people don't know about some other B things we're doing. And so we'll be sharing about those later. But I'm very excited and happy to be a part of the B Squad.
You have increased your Instagram presence. You be taking selfies at the hotel with you and your husband and stuff like that on your anniversary and everything.
Right, right. Well, Chris has a wonderful assistant now, Asia Bird. And Asia Bird showed me how to do the video.
To do a selfie.
Right. And she showed me how to do video.
Insta story.
Insta story. Thank you, Asia.
That was like revolutionary for her.
Okay, all right. So let's get to the business at hand.
Yeah, so we got a pimp in the building.
Right.
A PMP.
A PMP. So the guest we have today is interesting because I saw her at a BTST event and I said, you know Chris and Janine? Because I knew her.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of times when we describe Chris, we say he's a serial entrepreneur. So Nakia Drummond is the female version of serial entrepreneurship. And we actually met because we're both entrepreneurs and we were in an incubator class together. One that was, I think, one of the best that I've ever been in because I've been in several. And that's how we met. And we were in the same cohort. So I am glad that you're here, Nakia Drummond.
Thank you.
And we just want to talk about all things entrepreneurship in general, but especially for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I know based on, you know, I had my intern scouring the internet to get a lot of information about you, not just what was on your website. And what they brought back to me was that you basically have been an entrepreneur since you were knee high to a pup.
Yep.
And so just kind of talk to us about who you are, because you're also Baltimore born and raised, mm-hmm. Baltimore high school, and people in Baltimore really like that. I'm from Maryland, but not from Baltimore, even though I claim Baltimore as my second home. But when you say which high school you went to, it resonates. So, you know, tell us a little bit about your background.
And can you clarify this PMP thing before people listen to the podcast and leave with the wrong message?
Right. I am not a pimp. I am not.
So what is PMP?
PMP is a project management professional. So it's an international certification that says that, one, you can pass a really difficult test. It is a really hard test.
Isn't it called being a woman?
It's called being a woman, right?
It's a very difficult test.
Every day.
Being a black woman.
Every day. So yeah, PMP just helps me do my work really well. It's a way to... It's a method about thinking about how to get things done, sort of go from an idea through the end and do it on time, on budget, all of that.
So for clarity, you're not a PMP, but you're a project management professional.
Project management professional, and PMP is the acronym.
Okay, yeah. So I'm just dyslexic. It's not you. It's
I'm not a pimp.
Gotcha. Right.
No.
And when people Chasing, see it, you heard it's that, almost, right? it's like the good housekeeping seal of project management.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is well thought of, highly thought of. And like you say, the people that I know that have it say the same thing, because they have classes to teach you or to train you how to take the test.
Yeah,
it's very,
test
very
is hard
difficult.
As hell.
So I'm going to give you a fist bump.
So you have to take a test to be a PIMP.
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
You better know your stuff.
Hey, you got to know.
So, yeah, I am from Baltimore, and actually I did my ancestry last year at the beginning of the year after reading this amazing book that, like, made me want to know all about myself and everybody else, and found out my family's been in Baltimore since at least 1812. So, like, I'm from Baltimore, like, really from Baltimore. Went to Western High School. Shout out to the Doves.
Yep.
And I did go away for college, went away to Penn State, came back, and...
you see how casual she said that?
Yeah, went away to Penn
State. I went to Penn State, you know.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's big.
I did not love Penn State, so it's always like one of those things, like, yep, I did it. But
Chris always teases me because I went to the University of Maryland, so Jan didn't go to an HBCU.
Right.
Yep. Right. I missed out on that.
I know.
But I still had a good experience, but I did. I mean, you know, I gave my boys the HBCU experience.
I did not love being at Penn State. And, you know, I think a big part of it, it wasn't about not having black people around me, because I did, and we really were a tight community, but it was about all the other stuff around. But, you know, sort of as I've grown up, I'm like, would I have gone to an HBCU? And I go back and forth with it, because I really do feel like Penn State was the best education ever. Not, and I don't mean the classes, I mean the life education, because, you know, I lived in Baltimore, and at that time, Baltimore was very black, and, you know, it's becoming less so now. We got to do something about that. But yeah, when I went away to college, I was definitely in culture shock. So it was a great education on life, and it's where I really, you know, decided, like, oh, I'm riding for us forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really shaped the work that I do and all of that kind of stuff. So it was a good idea.
So would you have Asher go to a HBCU or a school like Penn State?
If you had to do it again.
You know, I don't, that part doesn't matter to me as much as studying abroad. Asher has to study abroad, period. Like, that was one of the best decisions I ever made, and I feel like that shaped me as much as anything
else. You studied abroad.
I studied abroad in London.
So she's a pimp and she studies abroad.
Right.
And international.
International.
Your son is still very young. And so hopefully by the time it's his time to study abroad, the world will be a different place.
Yeah. And I mean, I think for him, it'll depend on where he's in school. So I went to school in Baltimore City. So I was around mostly us, right? For a Baltimore City school, my school was very diverse. But I still was in Baltimore City. And so if he's in a private school where he's one of two black kids or whatever, then I would like for him probably to be at an HBCU.
Well, where did you study abroad at?
In London.
And what exactly did you do?
So I was a business major. I was
this
a marketing
is a part of
major.
Penn State?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And, but that particular semester was really much more about like cultural immersion. So we learned, we did a lot of, I took a lot of classes that like I just wanted to take, like a lot of, I love writing, so I took English classes and just ethnic studies and all of that, and traveled. Like that was the big thing. People were always like, oh, I know you shopped a lot. I didn't, because it was like, you can buy these jeans or you can hop on a plane and, you know, go to the next country. So that was definitely
the move. That's a mindset, though, even at that age, which, you know, I'm going to say young age because...
Yeah, I was 20.
Yeah, you were in your 20s, early 20s. And to be able to have a mindset like that as it relates to, I want to see the world versus I need the newest fashion.
Yeah.
And so I can see that all through your bio and the research that we did on you, that, you know, your mindset is something that was always around business and entrepreneurship and being, you know, just a better person, being a person that had a great affinity toward exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I don't know if everything you research is accurate, though. I'm looking at this. And it said, as a year early young girl, she would write on flyers and have her mother copy them at work.
Yes.
You were an entrepreneur back in...
I was in, like, second grade.
You were a second grade entrepreneur? Wow, that is nice.
Yeah, and it's funny because the thing that I started in second grade is so aligned with what I'm doing right now.
Really?
With the Well. Mm-hmm. I started this group called the Girls Talk and Walk Club. Don't ask me what we were talking and walking about. But literally had my mom make flyers. I remember on notebook paper, I stuck stickers on them and told her, take this to work and copy it. And I remember her stopping me like, Nikki, I think you should redo this flyer. And I'm like, why? And she's like, because you have yourself here as the boss. That was my title. Nikia is the boss.
That's
boss,
what my summer right. did.
Yes. And so she's like, maybe you should say the president or, you know.
She said, no,
the
it's not right.
No, she's like, right. No, I don't it. Think I'm people don't want a boss, Nikia. I'm not the boss of them, but I'm the boss.
Yeah. You know? I'm the boss of this club.
Right.
I created.
No, yeah. And I was so serious about it. So I've always been like, as a little girl, was told, you know, oh, she's so bossy, you know, like that was a thing.
I was an entrepreneur at a young age as well. I used to draw, and my mother, she had a passion. She used to frame.
Mm-hmm.
So I would draw. I would draw during the middle of church because I was just like preoccupied, and I was just like drawing in church, and then I would draw at home, and she would frame them and then sell them like in little art shows that
wow.
she was in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, doing like the Christmas holiday season and stuff
so
like
y'all
that.
Y'all had a collaboration. Y'all had
yeah.
a partnership.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just like in my, if you go to my aunt's house right now, over top of her toilet, there's a picture that
that you drew.
It, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's the place, if I should feel
but,
some type of way
about
the placement
original.
Of it. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, so I feel you from that young, early age of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And you carried that out now, like you said, you're an entrepreneur now with The Well.
Yep. And my consulting company. So yeah. The Well is
but
an initiative
that, yes.
of my consulting company. But, and I mean, it took me a while to get there. So it's funny because, you know, that happened really early in life. A little later in life, in my 20s, my mid, late 20s, I started a blouse line with my mom.
Blouse like mm-hmm. shirts,
yeah, white blouses, and we did that for
it's
a couple
like that
years.
Show, that, yeah, you ever see the guys thing now called Untuck It?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So something like Untuck It.
Very similar in that our reason for creating them was like about availability when you really want one, and all the women in the room know when you're looking for a white shirt, like oh, they're so hard to find. But
I know. When I see one and it's my size, I mean, like I have a
you
lot
have
of
to
them,
have it
have, because after a while
they don't
look white mm-mm. anymore.
Exactly,
so you have to get rid of them.
So it was that, and it was a fit thing. Like we created it around fit because it was like, you know, sometimes you'll like women will have smaller waists or a regular size waist but a bigger bust, and then you either have to get your shirt too big or you're pinning it five times. Like so anyway, we created this blouse line. It was really expensive endeavor, but and actually I launched
yeah, Chris
it
can tell you about merch.
Yeah, it was an expensive endeavor. I mean I'm sure there's a ton of better ways to do it than what we did at the time, but when I launched it, I had been on bed rest for 5 months for my son, and I was reading when I got told I had to be on bed rest for 20 weeks. I was like, how do I survive this? And one of the things I read was like, start a project. And we had been kind of like going through the motions with the blouse line. Like we had some designs and we had
a manufacturer. More recent.
Yeah, this was like 5 or 6 years ago we launched it. About 6 years ago. But we had started working on it some years before that. That's why I said like my late 20s, but because I'm old now. But but yeah, this is actually my third business, my consulting company, and The Well, which is birthed out of the consulting work that I do.
So step back for a minute for me before we talk about NDL strategies and The Well, because you also were a teacher at one time.
I was.
And you were a teacher?
Yeah.
How am I missing all of this?
I don't know.
Like I've only known you for like several years.
Yeah, we've known each other.
You didn't have
no, but we actually hang out. Like
we've known each other for about 7 years now.
Yeah, yeah. Like
you didn't know she was a teacher one
No, they hung out at our old house every day, and we kick it often.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, like we're like friends.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, but yeah, I was a teacher. So I was a teacher, which was a career change because I left school and was a consultant. So like my life is kind of like this kind of complete circle thing. But I was a consultant in IT consulting and I hated my life. And but, you know, I think some of it was just that people didn't understand millennials at that point. Mm-hmm. And I'm an early millennial, but still very true to like some millennial characteristics. And one of them is that we want to understand the impact that we have on our work and we don't want to have to climb some like unclear ladder to some unclear destination. And my consulting company just was not set up that way. It was very much like it was very hierarchical and you just take these steps. And I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And I prayed like, you know, God, what am I supposed to do? And I clearly heard teacher and got messages in church around being a teacher. Now, I think I took that very literally
right.
because there are a lot of ways to be a teacher. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so I don't necessarily think that
supposed to go into class.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was a bad thing that I did it, but I don't think that was the message in and of itself. I think I am absolutely a teacher, but did it mean I needed to teach 9 and 10 year olds? Maybe not. But
well, I disagree. I disagree because I think like we were talking prior to this, and then one thing you said that you want is a school.
Mm-hmm.
So how could you properly know that you want a school and know the different nuances of what it takes to have a school mm-hmm. or just manage a classroom and provide insight like that without having had that experience? And you still use some of those relationships now through your consulting firm, because one of the things you had me come speak at was the Be More Speaker Series, mm-hmm. which was also at a Baltimore City school. So,
oh yeah, Baltimore City is one of my biggest clients. I mean, my life in Baltimore City or my career in Baltimore City went well beyond the classroom. I was in the classroom the least amount of time of all that I'd done. But it was a great experience. And
you were assistant to the CEO.
I was a special assistant to the CEO. Mm-hmm. That was my last role in the district. But one of the me bringing up wanting a school, Chris, was much more about necessity and lack of good options for our kids than it was about me like really wanting a school. Like running a school is, whew, that's gonna be some work, right? But I want our kids to have spaces where they get to like learn the best and learn the most important things, but also like learn about themselves and be themselves. And so the school thing was much more about we need this for our kids than like wanting.
So Nakia, I really want the listeners to know about your consulting business. And especially about The Well, because mm-hmm. it specifically targets or encourages the input and the participation of women mm-hmm. in entrepreneurship. So give us some background on that and how people can be involved. And I know it's also a membership mm-hmm. component to it. And mm-hmm. so what are some of the benefits of membership?
So NLD Strategic is a management consulting firm, boutique management consulting firm focused on social impact. So we work with organizations, big and small, companies, government, that have a social mission or an initiative that is driving social change. So while the whole organization might be focused on selling lumber, made up a thing, but if they have an initiative that's about workforce development per se, and they have a goal to work on a particular project for some social good, then we do a lot of the strategy work. So we come in and we do strategy development and execution. So a lot of times our clients have a great idea, they might even have a great budget, but they really don't know how to execute and implement, or don't know what they want to execute and implement. So that's some of the work we do. Community engagement work. So people always say people don't like change, and I don't agree with that. I think people do like change, but people don't like change to happen to them. Mm-hmm. They like change to happen with them. So if you're not engaging the people that change is going to happen to, then you're doing it to them. And so we do a lot of work in communities to engage stakeholders and the changes that are coming, so that those who are making the decisions about the change can do it in a way that is informed by the people it's going to impact the most, and project management, right, as we talked about. Right. So we do quite a bit of project management.
You have a team of people that work with you?
We do. So not all of our team is full-time, though. Mm-hmm. Some of our team is just like on a project-by-project basis. Sure. It depends on what expertise we need, mm-hmm. and we team with others. So sometimes we work with a larger consulting group to provide a skill set or expertise that they don't have in-house. Right. I think, a lot of, particularly in consulting, the direction that people are going is, if I can keep it small, keep my costs low, and pull people in as I need them, or team with people as it makes sense, then you can still be a million or multi-million dollar company, right, and not have all of the overhead. So that's our focus. Right. Like, keep it tight in that way. But the well is our initiative. Mm-hmm. So we are constantly working on other social impact initiatives. The well is our turn at throwing our hat in the ring and saying that, hey, we see a need in society, something that's near and dear to us. Black woman business owner, we notice I'm a data geek. So the data saying that black women are starting businesses, and that's what's on social media, right? Like, black women are killing it, black women are starting businesses, and then the data says black women are starting businesses, but their revenues are $27,000 on average, mm-hmm. and white women own businesses on average, or all other women, is $140,000 or $150,000. Big disparity. And so I really wanted to explore that disparity through a space that I'm really familiar with, which is about building professional learning communities, and that's an area that I have expertise in. And that's what we've been doing through the well. And so I put this out on sort of three premises, that if we had an opportunity to build community that was for us, and we could come into a space that felt like it was for us and forge collaborations, confidence would grow, businesses would grow, and we'd be doing more together. We would get rid of the isolation factor. And we did we did several focus groups over 2 years before starting and launching the well.
So you just said a lot. I want to just rewind some and then get into each piece of it. Your consulting firm. Mm-hmm. What was the transition from the school to the consulting firm? Mm-hmm. Because I'm still stuck on the school part, because I didn't know this. I'm like, yo, how did I, what are we talking about when we actually hang out? Because I missed this whole part of it.
I let you talk most.
So where did that transition come from? And what was that like to get out there and start on your own? Because I know we could talk about the well and talk about the other businesses that you mentor, but there are other people that may not be in the well that maybe wanting to get into entrepreneurship and just don't know how to get into it or have the fear to get into it.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was time. I started, I was a teacher for 2 years in Baltimore City, and then I moved into the district office, and I worked in the district office for 7 years. But even from the very first day that I was a teacher, having been a career changer into teaching, I walked into orientation like, what is this? This is not professional. Like, I had been in corporate America, and I knew how they treated new employees, and I felt like I had learned so much about how to move projects along, and it was always in the back of my mind that I should do some consulting in that space that meant something to me. Because that was the thing. The space I was in didn't mean anything to me, but I actually did enjoy the work mm-hmm. in consulting.
So how do you build those relationships to be like, all right, I mean, how did that relationship happen for you? Like, I want to do consulting. I'm unhappy here at the school. but I want to work with the school in a different capacity.
Yeah.
Like, did you already have that relationship established with the school? You let them know, like, hey, I'm going to step out. Or did you step out first and then revisit?
They weren't a client right away, but I had been a part of one administration of the school district, and it's similar to government administrations. When you get new leadership in, they want all their own people, and it was just kind of time, right? Like, all of my people were transitioning out. I worked in the school district with all the chiefs, the C-level people, and so they were all gone to run other organizations. So I just started meeting with them. Like, I was in a place, I was just coming back from maternity leave, the new superintendent was there. He and I did this weird dance. He didn't really want me around, but he had to have me around because I had been on FMLA. So it was like, it was a perfect situation for me, because he couldn't touch my job, but he really didn't want me in any of the work.
Yeah.
And so everybody's like, well, girl, you just had a baby. Like, chill on that. Like, rest, you know, like, just come to work and chill. And I'm just like, but that's not me.
Yeah.
So I started meeting with people, you know, very strategically, going to lunch and maintaining those relationships that I built. And the biggest thing that I learned in that process was people... Everything matters. Everything you do matters. And so, like, the work that I did in the school district, my roles were mostly propping others up. I wasn't the person out giving the talk.
You were the kingmaker.
Yeah, exactly. And so people knew about the work that I was doing but didn't necessarily know me. But the people I worked with knew me, and they knew me. They knew the quality of my work so much that when I said I was leaving, people were literally like, come do this here. Come do this project here. We've got this project.
Nice.
Giving my name to other people because they knew the work that I had done. And I never realized while I was doing it that people saw me.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's so funny, and it takes for us to have this podcast to realize we already knew we had a lot of similarities before. But when I started BTST, I was working at a nonprofit school, Florence Patel, which turned to New Visions. And I went into the director's office. And I love her. Like, she taught me so much. And I was telling her, like, hey, I got this program that I started, and it's doing well, but I want to be here and all this other stuff. You know, and she told me she did what the person didn't do to you. She told me to leave. She told me, I don't have a choice. She said, either you leave or I'm going to fire you.
Yeah.
Because this is what you need to do. You need to be doing this. And so I stayed until I could replace my income.
Mm-hmm.
So people were like, oh, Chris, you take these big risks. No, I replaced my income
I did not.
I replaced my income before leaving, where I was able to work with enough clients where I was now serving as their mentor. But it felt so good when I left to be able to put all this energy into my project. And I just never turned back. And my project is just taking off system because you're able to invest that same time that you were doing something else into your own project. Yeah. Was that also the same case for you?
No. So
my experience was totally different.
I thought I was throwing an alley oop for like a yes.
My boss actually, I mean, so no and yes. So my boss, I went to him. We had no relationship. Remember, this is a new superintendent. I worked for a previous superintendent. We had no relationship at all. I came to him after 3 months of just kind of like wandering around the place, basically, because he, you know, didn't really want me in the stuff that they were doing. And I said, I'm leaving. I'm starting my own consulting, you know, business and everything. And he said, you'll be back. And I said, so says every man I've left.
Oh, that kind of hit the soul right there.
And, yeah, because I feel like it's this abusive thing that, don't get me started on that, but it is this abusive thing that people do.
And he probably wouldn't have said that to a man.
He wouldn't have, that people, that men do to women in relationships, whether it's a professional one or a personal one, where you make a woman feel like she's not enough to make it on her own or without you because of something you feel you don't have. You know she's enough, and that's why you want to scare her out of making that decision. And I felt like he did that, and I meant that. So says every man I've left. Like, that has happened to me multiple times, but I didn't replace my income in the sense that I had already been working with clients, but I had replaced it in the sense that I was having those meetings for those 3 months, like setting stuff up.
So
nothing
you
had started
leave,
exactly.
You already had it
the next day.
Okay.
Literally the next day, I was like rolling onto a project. And Baltimore City did not become a client right away because he stayed for 2 years, I think, but those people who stayed in the district who knew me or who went back to the district once he left and the new CEO was the former chief academic officer. And so a lot of people that worked with us before came back. then there was opportunity for Baltimore City to be a client.
Did you use that you'll be back like type of rhetoric as like motivation each day?
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time it's said
I have
to me.
I had somebody tell me something. They called us a mom and pop, and I will not let it go. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how big we get. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that fires me when I feel like I'm becoming slow and lethargic, like we were just talking about, or complacent. I picture him and I picture those words.
Yeah.
And it lights a fire in me.
Absolutely.
Would you say that for a lot of people, because I want to come back to the well now, but for a lot of the businesses that you're working with, that you work with inside of the well, do you inspire them to have that thing that you just internalize and you just use to motivate you?
I feel like all those women show up with it. Like
I mean, if you're a black woman, you probably already have a chip in your shoulder. Not to be in a voice of the way.
I mean, we've always felt like we had something to prove, right? That people are counting us out. I had this conversation yesterday with a client of mine because she was saying that somebody else was on the team and it's a white man. And she was like, you know, everybody, like when he came in, and they were just, you know, just kind of like, excited to hear what he had to say. And I was like, yeah, they walk in with the benefit of the doubt, you know. And she was saying how like people don't necessarily respond to her in that way, and it's her business. And I'm like, yeah, because they walk in with the benefit of the doubt, and we have to earn people's trust that we can get it done. And you know, and that's as a person of color, and that's as a woman, because this is a white woman I was talking to, but women have to do it too. But certainly the burden on us is even greater in that capacity, and I feel like that's always been the case. I do feel like there have been a ton of people who have supported me, but I definitely have those moments in my life where, you know, I'm going off to gifted and talented classes and the teacher whose class I'm in says to me, well, I don't believe that when I'm leaving the class to go to the, you know, to the next. But for the most part, I have had people who have seen in me, you know, that, oh yeah, she's going to get it done, or whatever the case. But I think that chip of I'm going to have to show up in this way, it's so generational with us that actually in the well, what we do is give each other grace and space, because the world is already like, get it done, come like this, show up like with everything perfect. We actually come to the space of the well able to not be perfect and not have to show up with everything, all your ducks in a row, like you've got it all together all the time.
I think also there's a fine line when you're a black woman and a woman of color and an entrepreneur as it relates to, you know, kind of showing up and being confident and not being then labeled as like, you know,
cocky.
Being cocky or even angry.
Right.
Like, I can't even deal with her because, you know, she's the angry black woman.
Right.
But, you know, and helping women, I'm assuming, through the well, understand what, you know, how to walk that fine line. Like you want people to know that you're competent, but you don't have to keep saying I'm competent.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the boss.
Yeah.
You know, I really know what I'm doing. You kind of show them, but you have to also be cognizant of how it's being perceived.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I don't see myself in the well as like this guru or this mentor, right? Like, I feel like we all bring to each other like so much that, I mean, some of the businesses in the well, their businesses make more than my business make. Like, but we all are bringing something to each other that it's not about the pressure of one person being the guru, right? Mm-hmm. Or having to know it all. So I think that we're able to reflect each other in a way that's like, if I come in and my energy's off, but I get to see you and you show up, then I'm going to show up differently. And so it's a different type of pressure where it's not like, I don't have to say it, you don't have to say it. We just show up and we, you know, we reflect each other.
So we're talking about the well, but I want us to get specific about the well. And I've had a bird's eye view for the time. I didn't want to be disruptive. Like we used she used to have the well classes here in the Life and Wellness Center, multi-purpose room. And so I would come through and she would shout me out, or they would have food, or I would try to come steal something real quick and stick my head in. And my wife was in the class, so I would always go, you know, take a peek at her. Mm-hmm. But speak specifically about what the well is, because it's groups of business owners, people that have their own business owners, not people.
Women.
Is it women
black
or
women.
Is it so black women that have their own businesses that join this program called the well? and you have a strategic way of putting them in like different groups where they have to work together or like build off of each other, and then you switch the group so they have to meet somebody new, and the whole time they're like learning different skills. So like you said, it's where you come, you don't have to have it all together, but we're going to teach you these different things. And then you even have like award ceremonies and stuff like that. So I know I just mentioned it slightly, mm-hmm. but I know you know it better than me.
So the WELL isn't a just structured, this very structured like incubator type program. So like what we went through, right. that wasn't the purpose of the WELL. Goldman Sachs.
You told me about the Goldman Sachs thing a while ago.
So Jen and I were in the same cohort.
We were in the cohort too.
Okay.
Yeah. In the very beginning.
And which one did you do? The one in Massachusetts or somewhere?
No, we did it here.
We did it here.
Oh, you locally. Did it here. Okay.
Yeah. We did it here.
I was looking at the one.
Yeah, you told me the national one.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so with the WELL, the major premise for the WELL is that when you're alone in business, you often feel isolated, and you often feel like if you don't like that you don't know all the answers. We never will, right? But that we really believe that in the coming together, somebody in here has the answer to some question that you have, or some challenge you have in your business, or some idea that can help you grow your business. And so it's not about us sort of like teaching all the things. It's about people bringing their real business challenges to the table. And then we have a process by which the members support each other through the challenges that they bring. So it has a mastermind, like it's kind of a mastermind, but with a very specific protocol that this notion of continuous improvement. So in my day job, right, through the consulting work, I do a lot of work in continuous improvement or improvement science, which is used in healthcare, it's used in education, where it's really about like making small bets about something. Like you make a hypothesis, if you will, about something in your business, something you're challenging. You bring it to the table and you get ideas on how to shift it, how to improve it, how to grow it. You make a plan around it, you go out and do it, and you come back and you bring that to the table. But what makes the WELL unique in addition to the process is the fact that if I go in other spaces and I know that if I say I don't know something, or, you know, there's that tension, right, for us in particular, if we don't know something, that it discredits everything we do know, if you will, or at least a feeling of that among us, that feeling is taken off the table because I'm with people who share my experience in a way, and we all support each other. So everybody there presents the challenges in their business 4 times a year. And in the times that they're not presenting, they're hearing other people's challenges, and you're getting ideas. When you hear somebody bring up something, you're like, oh,
I need that too.
Or I did that, and this is how that went for me. And, you know, you can kind of, you get to learn from each other in that way. And then we also do have experts in different areas come in and share ideas and content. Actually, Jada is coming in April to talk about, and actually I would love for both of you to come, but who's going to run the business if you're both there? But but we have her come in to talk about team or forming a partnership or a team as a growth strategy for business. Because another thing in our community that's so germane to our community is this I got to do it by myself mindset, right? Like I got to grow this thing, start this thing. And you and I have something complementary, like could we come together and build something bigger together versus me feeling like I have to have my own version of this and you feel like you have to have your own.
That's a great person. Chris and Jada have a very incredible story as it relates to the partnership that they formed when the clinic came online a couple years ago.
Jada, originally it was going to be two women who both have partners who are men. And, you know, one started the business and brought the partner on, and then it was Jada who came on board as well. So I wanted both perspectives, but the other person isn't able to be there that particular day.
Well, if you need me, I'll come and speak about the person that started the thing and how you saw, how you partnership can take the business up to another level.
Because a lot of the women in the WELL, and it's happening, I didn't sort of put it together that way. It's just that we need a space to be together, because a lot of women in the WELL are now collaborating. Over 70% of our members have collaborated with another member on an initiative, a project, a new product. I don't even know about it. Right.
That's 65% did Chef Cat collaborate with Janine.
Right, that alone, right. But like there's so many of them that I don't even know about. I'll hear them like, oh, I didn't know y'all were working on something together. And so that has been the best part to me to see like how people are coming up with a next thing or a new idea because they heard something from another person's business and figured out how to partner.
You put a lot of creative people in a room together and wild stuff will come out. Mm-hmm. How does someone get enrolled into the Well?
So up until this point, we've accepted new members every quarter. And this is... every quarter we have a networking
night.
So
at the beginning of a quarter, and so the next one would be when?
April.
Okay.
So we have an event at the end of every quarter, and at that event, there's an opportunity to join, and then in the 2 weeks after that event, there's an opportunity to join. And and then after that 2 weeks, then we start the next quarter. So we work on sort of a quarterly cycle. And when you were talking about the small groups, the pods, we shift pods each quarter.
Gotcha.
So you keep learning from new people and keep getting new people's ideas around how you're growing.
See, I know about the Well.
Right. But I know about something.
She's moved out and moved on to bigger and better things, got relationships with bankers and stuff like that. I just found this out today. Speak about what you've been able to do to help not only help people from understanding and presenting their problems or highlights in business, but how you're able to connect those individuals with funding, people that are in your program now.
Yeah, so thanks to Wells Fargo, and more specifically Monica Mitchell with Wells Fargo, who, you know, came to one of our quarterly events and saw just the caliber of women in the room and really wanted to bring that up, that fourth C. So I said we came in with community collaboration confidence, and she's like, cash. You all need capital. So we've got that fourth C where
we now have a loan fund
for our Baltimore City-based businesses that they can access through our local community development financial institution, Baltimore Business Lending. And so they're a partner of ours. That loan allows them through their membership to do the technical assistance aspect of acquiring the loan through the Well instead of having sort of another place to go, another thing to do. As we all know, time is our most precious asset. And that has, you know, that's really awesome because we hear so much about lack of access to capital. Mm-hmm. But the bigger thing that I think comes out of the sort of like the relationships with the banks is that we have a lot of distrust for the financial institution with good reason.
Right.
And what we're doing through the Well is saying, hey, we've got the space. It's ours. It's curated for us. So when women walk into our events or to our networking, our meetups, they're like, oh, I feel home. Like literally say that. That when the bankers come, it's like you're in our home versus us being in yours. And there's a different type of dialogue and a different relationship that can be built when somebody comes in your
home. So you're bringing the bankers to you.
They come to our events. And and they really have been like, they've been there because they know we have relationship and trust with a market that they do not. And so they've been at our events. And what we are learning and what we're seeing is, when they show up, because we have an open door policy, come sit in, hear some of these challenges in business that people are having. When they come consistently, our members are starting to work with them. Mm-hmm. But it takes time to build that relationship. It's like courting, right? Like you can't just make me come into your bank because, you know, there's a bank, another bank down the street, right?
And
so
free enterprise.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think that what you guys are doing is, like you said, they don't have access to some of the markets. So instead of this person going to this bank individually that don't know that they're now competing for their relationship versus the other way around. And that's a very
absolutely
important thing to do. And what I heard you mention just now was about the fear, about the anxiety of that relationship. Being that we're a mental health provider and in business, I would just like to hear about like how you feel that with the work that you're doing through the Well is impacting individuals' mental health, whether they're in their program or people that they're servicing?
Whew, it impacts my mental health. I mean, honestly, every time I'm in that space with that group of women, and even when we have the public facing events, and it's not just our members, but the women who come in, the spirit in which they come, and just being in a space where you can be you is necessary for mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Like being an only is draining. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cool and it's great and you get all the attention around it and all of that, but being an only is a draining place to be, because you do feel like you can't make missteps. So whether you're an only, meaning the only person in your family to ever own a business, or the only person in your family making the money for the family, or whatever your only is, so many of us are onlys, and that mental health, that piece of just being able to come together and be and not be the only anymore, mm-hmm. and allow yourself to take that coat off, that armor of being the only, is so necessary. But then we also do have a mental health component to our meetup. So two of our members are in the mental health space, but one in particular, shout out Dr. Tara, does this mindfulness moment with us in the beginning, which really is about giving ourselves permission to mm-hmm. to be present for ourselves, because it's hard as a business owner to take the time to go do your own development or whatever. You're always anxious about, like, I need to get back to my business or to get to work or whatever, yeah. particularly smaller businesses where you might be a solopreneur or one of two. Mm-hmm. And that time is really about, no, you get to take this time. You need this time, and it's for you. And we don't sacrifice ourselves there. So there's been times when another woman might get up for another woman to go out in the hall with her kid if a kid was right. there. So, mm-hmm. And she's like, no, there's no lack here. So if she's not getting it in this moment, she'll get it elsewhere. But you need this time. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not sacrificing ourselves here. We do it enough in other places. Right. And
That's great. So, Nakia, I just want to say that you are definitely an inspiration, I don't think just to Black women, but to women, and appreciate the time that you spent with us here. I put up on my Instagram post again this quote during Black History Month from James Baldwin that said, I will not fit into a place until I create that place, mm-hmm. right? And I think that is probably the mindset of a lot of what gives people the impetus to start their own businesses, is because they've done it for so long for somebody else and it hasn't given them a return on their, mm-hmm. you know, their time and their experience and their investment until you create that place.
Absolutely.
And so I think that you have been, the conversation here has been valuable to those people who are thinking about it but just don't know what that first step is. And so I would encourage them to come to your website,
yeah.
especially if they're Black women, and see what the well is all about. Is there an opportunity for you to just come just to see what it's about before you join?
So the networking night is where you can just come, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a free event, and we've been hosting it quarterly. We're only doing it 3 times this year. The next one is March 19th, and if you go to She's Well Networked on Instagram, there's a link in the bio to register for it. You do need to register. We have not allowed non-members to come to meetups.
Right, understood.
But you do get the flavor for the vibe being at the networking night, for right. sure, and just the community, that feel of it. But all of our members are existing business owners, so I will say that. So we're not the start a business mm-hmm. group. We are the you have a business that you're growing right. group. But it's a special place, and I'm not okay. saying that just because, you know, I started it. It fills me up just as much as anybody else who's a part of it.
Well, as a business owner, as a Black woman business owner, I know that you need those kind of networks and those kind of to know that other people are going through the same struggles and victories that you're going through. So thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having
and
me.
And thank you for listening today. Please, if you're not subscribed to BTST's Meeting You Where You Are podcast, please do that right now on Podomatic, and the Apple Podcast app. And we will see you the next time. And until then, peace and blessings to you.
Thank you both.